I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a mini episode of Cinematic Universe. I'm your host Joe Cunningham, and joining me to bridge the gap between the minisode and Black Panther are
Seb Patrick
and James Hunt.
So we basically, enough news has come up on our radar in the past week that we thought, even though you're not going to have to wait too long for our Black Panther episode, we would, you know, we'd convene to talk some, well, like just like three trailers, a couple of decent pieces of news from this past week.
And apart from James, we're not London movie metropolitan elite anymore. So you and I have not yet seen Black Panther because we have to wait until it actually comes into ordinary cinemas rather than getting to fancy screens.
I believe Amon has seen it six times by now, is that correct?
Wow. He definitely, I know when I saw it, he had two more showings planned in the next 2 days.
I was actually, I saw him tweet just as he was going in, and I tweeted at him to say how excited for him I was, and I was watching for his first post-viewing tweet afterwards as well. It was lovely.
Anyway, so hopefully we like the movie as much as the rest of the universe seems to have liked it. But that episode will be coming next week. Seb, do you know when you've seen the movie yet?
I don't know, because the problem with it coming out this week is that it's coming out on Valentine's Day. And my wife might quite want to see it, but if we have limited babysitter windows of opportunity.
I mean, 50 Shades Freed is out this week as well, right? So.
Oh yeah, you say that every time an advert for that comes on the TV, Joe jokes about wanting to go to see it this week, so we might end up doing that.
My favourite joke is it's pronounced 3D.
Wow. I actually can't wait. I'm seeing it on Tuesday, so that will... That'll be great when we actually get to bring you our thoughts on that, but it will be at some point next week. But this week, news, minisode news. And I think we'll start off with the trailer which left us with the most to talk about, which was Deadpool. So we got the first Deadpool 2 trailer, which kind
of... Actually, you say that. Well, what we got the trailer for was the untitled Deadpool sequel. Which, as far as I can see, still seems to be the closest thing that film has to an official title. It's not called Deadpool 2. The video on YouTube is not called Deadpool 2 trailer.
Oh, really?
It's called Deadpool Meet Cable. The name of the film does not appear anywhere in the trailer. The film officially does not have a title, and I think it's going to be released under the title Untitled Deadpool Sequel. I honestly think
that
would be
cool. That'd be really funny. Or, I mean, as this trailer, like... potentially hints towards in a couple of moments, it's just called Deadpool : X-Force or something like that.
It'll probably be called Cable and Deadpool and Cable, right?
Mm.
Deadpool versus Cable, something like that.
Yeah, that's fun though. That's I like that you spotted that, Seb, because I've just assumed that it's Deadpool 2. Okay, so untitled Deadpool sequel trailer, Deadpool meets Cable.
Yeah.
Kind of everything that we've grown to expect from marketing for a Deadpool movie, in that it is half an actual trailer and half a meta joke about the movie itself.
It's a really great trailer. I mean, the thing about Deadpool is it's always going to walk this line of at some point it's going to be too pleased with itself and the joke might fall flat. But Deadpool has got itself in as a franchise, has got itself in this position that's both good and bad. which is that if it makes you laugh, it can get away with anything. But it, the moment it stops making you laugh, the whole thing will fall apart.
I mean, that last teaser was a bit the wrong side of that line, wasn't it?
The one where he was doing the art.
The one where he was changing in the alley or whatever.
That was the first one. Yeah. Which I didn't like.
The last
one
was the Bob Ross painting one. Yeah.
Which I thought was better, but I think this was the strongest.
This was excellent because this exactly picked up the tone of the first one. It did that thing of when we talked about the Ant-Man trailer about just telling you that there's more of the same, and it does, but it really does get across what the new element is. And I really like the way, you know, it plays every cable shot so straight, and then every time it cuts to Deadpool, it's a joke. And it's basically taking what they did with Colossus in the first film and just ramping that up. And I feel like that is how the whole film is going to play out, is that Cable is just going to be played deadly seriously and then just constantly punctured.
The thing I liked about it was that they did like proper comics Cable, like he is a like soldier of fortune from the future.
Pretty much the only thing they've done is take away the kind of X-Men family connection stuff, haven't they?
Well,
they've kept
as far as we know.
And they'll probably joke about it.
I would not be surprised to see some jokes about that turn up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was on the very first teaser, wasn't there? Was like a Hope Summers piece of graffiti on it on the
and he is carrying a teddy bear. Which, you know, does this suggest that he has been separated from a baby that he was looking after?
I think the teddy bear will be the thing that he was sent to the future with.
And do you know what? I would be very surprised if there isn't a joke at some point about whether he is Sophie Turner's son or Famke Janssen's. The one thing that I came away from this trailer, because the stuff that I expected was the meta humour, loved the Toy Story gag, that's great.
The moustache joke.
Yes, all very strong. But this movie looks like it's got a budget, which the first movie definitely did not. And again, I'm sure that's something that you can have great fun poking at in the movie. Hey, you gave us some money to make this time. Oh, look, here are some more mutants, which we weren't allowed to feature the last time. But also, I mean, there was something a little bit disappointing about the first Deadpool movie where, like, as I think, as we've said before, we kind of really loved all the Wade and Vanessa stuff. And then some of the action sequences really worked. And then at the end, it's like, okay, and now we're going to stand on this like 2D video game Sega Genesis building and have a bit of a scrap at the end of the movie. And that's it, because that's really all we can do. This looked like it had some money.
Yep.
And it looked like it had some scale.
It's almost like the first one was massively successful.
Yes. And I kind of loved all of the glimpses of, you know, the other cast members. Big news, Terry Crews is in this movie, you guys.
Yeah.
that's awesome. I mean, I always like me a bit of Terry Crews. And that was just something that I don't think anyone knew anything about. And it looks like he's on some kind of team with Deadpool.
Some kind of force, you might say.
Yes. So there's in that shot, there's Terry Crews, there is the Zazie Beetz Domino character, there's Deadpool, and then there's a guy over their shoulder who I couldn't quite make out, but I saw some people online saying that it might be Shatterstar. Is that a mutant, James, who you are familiar with?
You know, I hadn't actually seen that guy in the background, but looking at the headgear, yeah. Like 100% Shatterstar headgear.
What is a Shatterstar, James?
Shatterstar is a character from the future of the Mojoverse who was bred to be a gladiator, and he has swords that are like double swords.
Wait, can we skip back a little bit? Explain to me something that I don't understand. What the fuck's a Mojoverse?
Mojo is a satirical character created for the X-Men who. He was like a stand-in for Marvel's corporate owners at the time, and he lives in a dimension where he only wants comic characters to be entertainment.
Wow, so that is Deadpool set in the Mojoverse?
No. But yeah, so Shatterstar is from the future in the Mojoverse.
The thing about Shatterstar is, in the comics, you know how Cable is the most stereotypically Rob Liefeld looking character?
Yeah.
He isn't. Shatterstar is.
Okay. I'm gonna have
He's
to
got a
this
ponytail.
What's wrong with that? I mean, it's the double swords and headgear that's the problem.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cover of a comic here, which is X-Force Shatterstar, and it has Cable and Shatterstar on it.
There you go.
And wow, that's a thing. It's fun that this movie, whilst being absolute nonsense, seems like it has lots of like nerdy Marvel stuff in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's been made in a lab to please us.
All of this, I mean, it was a fantastic trailer and a fantastic piece of marketing, and I do think this film looks like a lot of fun. Not to pour a bucket of cold water over it, but do we feel slightly uneasy about this film with the twin things of, one, it's still got TJ Miller in it, you know, he hasn't been Kevin Spacey'd, and two, the death of the stunt woman in what seem like potentially negligent circumstances. Does that cast a pallor over this film?
The death of the stunt woman, I think, is something that has bothered me for a while. And I tweeted about this a while back, but the kind of reports coming out specifically kind of criticised the producers, saying, you know, like, this was something that happened on set because the producers were negligent and didn't do their job to ensure the safety of this of this stunt woman, and I forget her name, but I think
Joy Harris.
Yeah, and I did mention this in a previous minisode. I don't think it should be overlooked that the producers on this movie are Simon Kinberg, Ryan Reynolds, and Lauren Shula Donner. You know, these aren't like anonymous faces. Mm. These are people that we absolutely know who they are, and it doesn't feel like anyone has really acknowledged it. Like, I remember the week that it happened, that the only kind of talk coming out of the movie was Josh Brolin giving some interview kind of like talking up how badass Cable was going to be. And yeah, I kind of think that for me really does put a bit of a shadow over this, in a similar way to the death of the stunt person on The Walking Dead. I mean, I don't watch that, but you know, I think it's something that Hollywood is going to have to start talking about a bit.
There's
more
no
seriously.
Movie good enough for someone to die, right?
Well, yeah, no. And I mean, I'm not saying because this is not something that has been, as far as I'm aware, has actually gone as far as being fully investigated and gone to court or anything. So I'm not necessarily saying, oh, Deadpool 2 should have been halted and not made. But if you look at what was the name of the film, Midnight Rider, you know. That film was not considered too important to still exist after somebody died filming due to the negligence of the director.
I know
it's different circumstances. It's, you know,
they were actually breaking the law on Midnight Rider.
Yeah, I know. It's a horrendous story that, you know. But that's an extreme example. But as you say, it's, I think more than anything, it's the fact that it hasn't really been acknowledged very much, and that suggests to me that their consciences aren't 100% clean on it, you know? They haven't been able to sort of come out and really talk about it, and it's like, well, you know, why is that? And that's troubling, I think.
Yeah, the TJ Miller side of things...
I mean, it's accusations, isn't it? So it's, how far do you But yeah.
I think with TJ Miller, I think the difference with the accusations against him to some of the other people.
Oh, I mean, you know, yeah, he's not Kevin Spacey, but I mean, to an extreme example there. But
no, but what I was going to say is, I think that he is someone who, before those accusations came out, we all knew was a complete and utter arsehole. Like, there's nothing about TJ Miller's persona that tries to hide what a douchebag he is. You know, like even when I found him hilarious in something like Silicon Valley, everything that you hear about that guy makes him sound like a bad person. The thing that I always think with TJ Miller is that if he was like born two or three decades earlier, he would be like up there with Chevy Chase as one of the big comedy icons of his era. when we kind of accepted that behaviour and the kind of the rough side of things that came with it. Unfortunately for him, he's not a comic in that era, and he has to be responsible for the things he says and does. And I have spent a long time watching TJ Miller thinking this isn't a great guy, but I do kind of find him funny on screen.
It's tough, isn't it? Because like if you plan to boycott every movie that's got anyone involved in sexual misconduct sort of involved, it's going to be a increasingly barren landscape.
For me, there was already a Paul cast over TJ Miller in any movie I watched. This only really amplifies that. And yes, James, I completely agree. I wouldn't.
You can't take a hard line, can you?
I think there are a few pieces of art that I would be willing to boycott, but also those pieces of art then do come with, you know, that thought or that feeling on top of it of I am now processing you differently in my brain because of the things that I know outside of just this piece of art.
Yeah, I mean, also, I kind of think I wouldn't pay to see TJ Miller live, but if he's in a movie that I would watch anyway, I'm not going to not watch it because he's in it.
Sorry, I brought that one down a bit, I know. It was just, I think it was just because up to this point, I haven't talked about Deadpool 2 in a really kind of effusive praise kind of way, and that trailer was very positive, and I do just feel that, you know, ignoring, being massively positive about it while ignoring that stuff is, you know.
Yeah, no, I think my personal approach is the best thing to do is to talk about it.
Yeah,
and
acknowledge
so
it.
So you can watch something like this, you can watch a movie like Deadpool 2 and enjoy it, but as long as you don't let the people, you know, who are responsible for doing shitty things get away with that. If when Deadpool 2 comes out, everyone watches it, but we also talk about the fact that a stunt woman was killed filming the movie, and it doesn't feel like there's been anything done about that. You know, that's kind of how the Me Too movement got kicked off, is people started talking about stuff. Yeah. And so that's certainly my approach to it. But yeah, trailer looks cool, I guess. Let's finish. Final note on Deadpool, on untitled Deadpool sequel. Julian Dennison turning up was... we knew he was in it. But look, I'm intrigued by who he's playing. He's got like some kind of weird collar around his neck.
He's wearing an inhibitor collar.
Yeah.
Is the technical term. Which means he's a mutant whose powers have been suppressed.
Oh. Do you think he's come from the future as well? Maybe he's friends with Laura.
Nah. I mean, so there's no obvious character who he looks like in that design. So I imagine he's just playing an original character who is as much like his other characters as he is.
Cool. And Zazie Beetz' Domino looks fucking rad, and that is probably the thing that I'm most excited about seeing in the movie. And also, it's nice that Marina Bakarin got a shot in this trailer. Yeah. she's still in the movie, and I hope this is not like... I hope she doesn't just get waved away and she is still like a significant part of the film, because she might have been the best thing about the first one.
It's hopefully just the case that she's not involved in this story, but that she's still there. You know, she's still around and they are still a couple. It's just that what's going on in this story doesn't affect her, so there's not a need for her to be around. I still don't know why you would minimise her role in the film if that was the case, but yeah.
Okay, let's move on to a trailer which there is a lot less to talk about. We got our first look at Venom.
did we really?
We got a look at something.
We got our first look at the Venom logo.
I teed you up there, boys. Like a 90-second trailer for Tom Hardy playing Eddie Brock in a movie that is called Venom.
Right.
There is a brief shot in the trailer of Riz Ahmed stood over like a little containment tube that looks like it's got something like the venom, like the symbiote in it. But that's it.
Can I? I've written down everything that happens in this trailer for Sony's next big comic book adaptation. Okay, so let me run through this with you, and then we can talk about all the kind of really significant details and. Little nods and, you know, bits of comic lore that we see in this trailer. Okay, so this is everything that happens in this trailer. Okay, so Tom Hardy goes into an MRI machine while some people watch. There's a shot of the Golden Gate Bridge. Tom Hardy walks down a street wearing a hoodie. Tom Hardy walks into a shop wearing a leather jacket. Michelle Williams looks distressed. Tom Hardy stands in a poorly lit room full of medical equipment. Somebody lifts a sheet of plastic covering off a table, possibly a table of medical implements, it's not clear. A large number of emergency vehicles surround some lights in a field. There's a shot of some unidentified wreckage in what is presumably the same field. Tom Hardy wakes up on a hospital stretcher. A car and an armoured vehicle drive through the rain. A man, who I didn't actually realise was Riz Ahmed, but evidently is, now that you've said it, opens a cupboard to reveal some animated black goo in a tube. Tom Hardy looks shifty on the street. Tom Hardy rides a motorbike through two crashing cars. A man in a white coat responds to an emergency in a scientific or medical lab. Tom Hardy runs through a forest. A man, possibly Tom Hardy, falls in a lake. Tom Hardy turns around and pushes his hand towards persons or objects unseen. A group of people in an office are flung backwards, possibly by kinetic energy, implying that it's possibly a result of what we've just seen Tom Hardy do, although that's probably just editing two different scenes together. A crashing vehicle flips over. A man in a white coat looks perturbed. Tom Hardy wakes up on a hospital stretcher for the second time and screams, and a title card tells us that this is apparently a movie based on the popular Spider-Man anti-hero Venom.
Shall I tell you the thing that cracked me up most about that trailer? Is that there's that big voiceover, and it ends on the words, "We all have our demons," or something. And it's like, surely, if you're going to do that, the words you want to end on is Venom. Right? Just a thought.
It's just so... I mean, literally, if you cut the shot of the black goo in the tube out of the trailer, it would have no resemblance or connection to anything you might recognise as Venom.
I liked the thing you retweeted, Seb, that was like, looks like someone cut together a fan trailer for Venom from other Tom Hardy movies.
Because I think what helps with that is those two successive shots of him wearing different outfits, but yeah. both shot from behind, but wearing two different outfits in two different places.
I don't understand why Sony felt the need to put this out into the world, because it doesn't, like... Even, I can understand... putting out a trailer for a movie and not showing your superhero or villain, as the case may be. I can get that in the same way that you can release a horror movie or a monster movie without showing, you know, the big draw.
You can do a Godzilla trailer and not have like a full shot of Godzilla in it. Like,
I think it depends on the character though, because I think with Venom, you need to tell the general movie going audience that this has something, anything to do with Spider-Man.
Well, I can see that waiting till later. The one thing that this trailer had to do, if it wasn't going to show Venom, was show you an exciting movie that you were looking forward to see, whether or not it was a Venom movie or not. So think back to when people thought that Life was a Venom prequel because it had black goop in space. Like, that movie didn't, that the trailers, that movie didn't really show you anything, but it had all this lineup of stars, it had all of this space adventure, and it had like set pieces and like exciting things happening. Nothing's fucking happening in this trailer. there's no suggestion of what the plot of the movie is, other than Tom Hardy is a man who has some demons. And basically, this is a 90-second trailer that tells you Tom Hardy is in a movie coming out later in the year.
Yeah.
And
they could have
I've seen
they could
some
have achieved...
Tom Hardy movies. That's not good enough.
Everything that this trailer tells you, with the possible exception of the fact that Michelle Williams is in it, because I can't remember if I knew that, although I think I possibly did, but I think I forgot it until I saw the trailer. And admittedly, that is something that makes me marginally more interested in the film. But
you did, Seb, because I was like, I was trying to use that as a reason why would Michelle Williams sign up for this movie? Like, she doesn't have to do this movie. She doesn't even want to get paid for her all the money in the world reshoots, so she's certainly not doing it for the cash.
But basically, everything that this film tells you could have been achieved by only having that one shot of Tom Hardy screaming at the end and then cutting to the Venom face thing that they cut to at the end. The preceding 90 seconds are completely irrelevant because they don't tell you anything about the character, they don't tell you anything about the story, they don't tell you what this is. And it's not even one of those things. You know, sometimes you get those trailers for comic booky superhero type movies that... Well, actually, the Deadpool trailer does it. If you don't know what or who Cable is, then that trailer opens looking like a generic sci-fi action film before then revealing like that it's actually sequel. Deadpool. Did I say Daredevil just then, or did I actually say Deadpool? I feel like I might have said Daredevil again.
Continuing a long-standing trope.
Listeners pressing the skip back 15-second button.
But yeah, you know, that happens sometimes where you get those... I think back original Spider-Man trailer, the wonderful original Spider-Man World Trade Center trailer that looks like a generic heist movie, and then suddenly at the end Spider-Man turns up. So that in itself is not unusual. But this trailer doesn't do that because it doesn't give you that bit at the end that says, hey, this is an exciting, awesome comic book movie after all.
What you get is something that looks like a generic horror film until the end.
Yeah.
The only thing that I wonder is, are they trying to hold back on revealing it's a, like that it's Venom because either the character is going to look like they've got a new character design for Venom and it's moving away from the classic design? Or whether they're trying to go, oh god, last time we showed Venom on screen, it really wasn't well received. And in either of those cases, I would go, well, why make a Venom movie?
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah, neither of those, yeah, if you're going to do this, you've got to have the confidence in what you're doing with the character, whether that's doing Venom as he should be or doing a new, or, you know, doing something like. It wouldn't surprise me if he ends up looking more like the Flash Thompson version in terms of how he's actually realised as Venom, but.
So I don't know if you guys have been... I've seen a couple of things that have come up out of the filming of this movie, and there are rumours that Tom Holland was on set and that he would be turning up as Peter Parker but not as Spider-Man. So, I mean, we'll see whether that happens or not, or what that means. I mean, frankly, I'm not sure I really care. But the other thing was that it seems like this movie had a real fast shoot, and also that, like... So it finished shooting late January, and it's coming out in October, which is a, you know, that's a fast turnaround to do all your post-production on a movie that, you know, the heroes or the villain is Venom. The main character is Venom. So when you show him, that's going to require quite a lot of CG post-production work. It feels like a very tight turnaround. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, I'm kind of expecting at this point this movie to be a little bit experimental and different, which is why I'm so confused by such a generic trailer. Well, like, why put out the trailer? I don't understand.
That's what I don't understand. Like, there's nothing in this trailer that improve. Like, the day before, right, they put out that poster, which was essentially Venom's face and the Venom logo. And it was like, the trailer does nothing more than that. If anything... Yeah. It makes you a lot less interested than the poster did.
Yeah.
And we're 7-8 months away. There's no, you know, you don't have to start a movie's promotional campaign.
The hype train can remain in the station for a while longer.
Yeah, and certainly I wouldn't be bothering until we're past Infinity War, to be honest. Wait until the Marvel movies are fucked off, and then you've got, you know, it's you and X-Men Dark Phoenix, basically.
Yeah.
So that would be my thoughts.
I mean, there is
and so just a very very bizarre trailer.
Can I posit a theory? Because I mean, Venom is one of those films that we have for quite a while still maintained a position that it possibly doesn't actually exist. And given that what we said before, and it was that joke that I nicked it off somebody on a forum, which is why I didn't just pretend it was my own, but that it looks like it's just been cut together from other Tom Hardy films. Are we sure it hasn't been?
He certainly claims to have filmed it.
Yeah, people claim a lot of things.
Listen, you know my position on all of this. These movies are all happening always, until they're not. And this one definitely feels like it is happening. There is a trailer and everything.
But what it doesn't have is a marketing team. It's just, like, I just don't know why you wouldn't lead with the Spider-Man connection.
Well, I'm fairly sure.
You know, this is a dark version of Spider-Man. That's what the selling point of this film is going to be.
No, I think you can do Venom without Spider-Man. It's not necessarily the right idea, but I think...
Yeah, but they're not doing Venom without Spider-Man, are they?
Well, are you sure?
Well, yeah, because there's rumours that Tom Holland's going to be in it.
Yeah, rumours.
And they put the webbing kind of... You know, they give it a webby look when they do the logo at the end.
I mean, I kind of think they're going to downplay any Spider-Man connection here. Not least because... Like... Surely they can't imply it's part of the MCU, right?
I'm not sure I agree with you that you can really do... I think, we've talked about this before, I think in the Marvel Universe as it is now, you can do Venom without Spider-Man because he's established. Although even then, when they did that, they made him Flash Thompson. That's still a Spider-Man connection. I don't think in general you can really... I don't think what makes Venom is worth doing without that Spider-Man connection. It's kind of like deciding to do the Joker without Batman. Not that I'm trying to segue or anything, but...
Fuck it, let's do it. Okay, we'll come back to the third trailer. So, apparently Joaquin Phoenix is in talks to star in Todd Phillips' standalone Joker movie. So this is the one, in case you've got your Joker movies mixed up, this is the one that would not be in the DCEU. It's this one that would be part of, like, a bespoke Warner Brothers imprint, where they get to do more ambitious, like, director-driven movies. This would be directed by Todd Phillips, produced by Martin Scorsese. And apparently there is an agreement that if the movie gets the green light, that Joaquin Phoenix will play the Joker in the movie directed by Todd Phillips. And basically what we are waiting on now is Warner Brothers to decide whether they want to make it or not. Joaquin Phoenix, you guys, that is the thing that I need to get interested in this movie. I'm now actively rooting for its existence so I can see Joaquin Phoenix play the Joker.
Also,
am I alone here?
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily looking forward to that specifically. Like, it doesn't put me off. I do kind of think if the only barrier to getting this movie made now is whether Warner want to do it, I mean, is there a movie idea they don't want to do in the DC universe?
You would imagine one of the things that would make them decide whether or not they want to do this or not is whether they're going to progress with their other Joker movie plans, whether there is a Harley and Joker movie, whether the Joker is going to be part of Suicide Squad 2.
I mean,
whether they plan on bringing Jared Leto.
I was going to say, no disrespect to Jared Leto, but he was the shittest Joker there's ever been, and I hope he never acts again.
And also, I think it's also an enormous decision for Warner Brothers whether they start deciding to make movies featuring DC characters that aren't part of the DCEU. Because that would really be breaking with kind of everything that the studios are doing with their superheroes right now.
I'd like DC to do that. I'm actively in favour of DC doing that at this point.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too. And but even this week we heard that Shazam is definitely part of the DCEU. There's no like qualms about it. It is part of the DCEU. So if they decide to do this, it is kind of like it's a major decision in how they're handling the DC brand at Warner Brothers. So I do think it is a big decision for Warner Brothers. And
can I raise a point about Joaquin Phoenix that I'm not sure I've seen made in relation to this news?
Go on.
This film is supposedly going to be a prequel story set in the 1980s about the Joker's origin. Joaquin Phoenix is 43. How old is the Joker meant to be in the present day if he only becomes the Joker when he's in his mid-40s?
Well, no, it's a movie that's set outside of all of the current continuity, so it could be.
Well, why is it set in the 80s then? But the point is, why does the Joker only become the Joker as a 40-year-old? That's weird.
Well, yeah, but presumably that's part of the story they're telling, and if it's got nothing, if it's what they said to begin with, which is it's basically a Scorsese-inspired King of Comedy kind of thing, that it's you know, it's kind of like as removed from DC lore as you can get. Then it's just a bloke who becomes the Joker.
Also, I mean, I'm just looking up how old Jack Nicholson was when they made Batman 89, and he was about 52.
Also, kind of, isn't like one of the Joker's origins is that he's like a comedian who went insane because he was failed or whatever.
All it can take is one bad day.
No, he was a comedian whose pregnant wife gets electrocuted, but he's about like 20 in that. He's really young.
Yeah, but I mean, if you wanted to do a Joker with that background of being a, you know, failed comic or whatever, that's, you know, you could imagine him as a sort of Richard Herring type who has a very bad day.
Oh, that is, honestly, that is the best pitch we've ever had, not in the pitch segment. But it's incredible.
Now you've said that, that's reminding me of the other thing that struck me about this news, which was that it kept being illustrated with recent photographs of Joaquin Phoenix, who appears to have turned into Adam Buxton.
Sorry, I'm just imagining Stuart Lee in the bat suit, and I can't get past that.
I mean, Stuart Lee is canon, so canon in the DCU, right?
He is, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he died in the most recent issue of Doomsday Clock.
There you go.
Incredible.
Well, you know, as I've said before, you know, yeah, maybe that is the way they're going to go with the origin, because as I've said before, if the one thing the Joker really needs is a thorough retelling of his origin. It's the one thing the character's always been missing. So,
I don't know. Like, the when this was first announced, it sounded like, you know, a bit of a pipe dream, probably would never happen, but because Martin Scorsese had given some kind of tacit nod to Todd Phillips, it might happen. I can't say I'm particularly interested in watching Todd Phillips try and ape 80s era Scorsese.
He's not a director not a that you'd that you put together with that idea, is he?
No, but I mean, like, fair play. If the guy has ambition and has a movie in mind, I don't think he's a bad director by any stretch, but he's certainly not, you know, he's not proven himself in any genre other than, like, gross out wacky comedy. So, that side of things doesn't move the needle for me at all. But honestly, as soon as you put the word Joker next to Joaquin Phoenix, I'm like, I do want to see that.
Is that just because Joaquin looks a bit like Joker? You put them next to each other, they flow together quite well.
If they'd have said that Joaquin Phoenix was going to be taken over from Jared Leto as the Joker in the DCEU, that would have made me equally interested. Just because he's one of those actors that I think you would get something unique from his take on the Joker, and unique in a good way, not in the Jared Leto way.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, but if they said Joaquin Phoenix is taken over from Jared Leto in the DCEU, that would mean that there is definitely never going to be another Jared Leto Joker movie. So who wouldn't want that? Yeah. You could substitute any name there.
I just like the sound of this. There aren't many actors that you could say to me, do you want to see this guy play the Joker? And I would say yes, but Joaquin Phoenix is one of them.
I will grudgingly concede that, it's, you know, it would make me marginally more interested in this because Joaquin Phoenix is interesting and I like him and he's good at playing weirdos. But the second part of what you said there, yeah, I do feel kind of in a frame of mind at the moment where I don't feel like I need to see anybody play the Joker for quite a good long while.
I don't know, just wash away that dirty taste of Suicide Squad.
Yeah, but I did that. Nice. It was called going back and rewatching The Dark Knight and spending 2 hours on a podcast talking about how amazing Heath Ledger was. That worked fine for forgetting Jared Leto.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see whether that happens. But I think it will be, if that does get the green light, it will be intriguing for what DC has planned. And obviously we know kind of all of these movies that were announced pre-Justice League and kind of the fallout that happened at Warner Brothers when Justice League was released. There's probably a lot of projects in development there that will never see the light of day, and they're probably very carefully choosing which ones they want to commit to, because, yeah, that's going to massively shape the brand. I'm going to skip to another piece of DC news now, which is that Michael Bay has apparently met with Warner Brothers about Lobo. Do you remember us talking that Lobo might be a movie, you guys?
What might not be a movie? Like, every character, every DC character might be a movie.
Yeah,
I barely remember us discussing the possibility of Lobo, yeah.
And Michael Bay is...
I mean...
So, I don't know anything about Lobo.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot... We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Be you guys, but anytime I see a picture of him, I go, nope, pass. Not interested. Not interested in that.
Well, the thing about Lobo was that, I mean, he wasn't created as this because he was actually he was around in the 80s as just a villain, but then in the early 90s, and he got a revamp and a redesign, and he was redesigned by Simon Bisley. And if you know anything about comics, you'll understand why he looks the way he does, because of the fact that Simon Bisley drew him. And what they tried, what they basically turned him into, was a parody of 90s ridiculous, over-the-top, violent comics. There's quite a lot of Wolverine in there, but like a piss take of Wolverine. You know, he has the healing factor thing of like you can reduce him, he can regenerate himself from a drop of blood. He'll grow back. And for a while, it kind of worked, and he was mildly amusing. But what I was talking about earlier with Deadpool of jokes wearing thin, like, that definitely happened with Lobo. And since then, people have either tried to do the joke thing with him again, and it hasn't really been funny because that time's gone, or they've tried to play him straight, and it works even less than if you try to play him funny and do it badly.
Yeah, so you know when I was like, okay, put the Joker and Joaquin Phoenix together, I don't care, I'm interested. Put Lobo and Michael Bay together, based on what you just said, Seb. No, thank you. Yeah. No to either of those options. Michael Bay trying to be funny is...
That's what I was like, going to say.
Guide your eyes and ears out.
Like, awful. I'm speaking as someone who quite enjoyed Transformers 4 and 5.
Nope, James, like... no.
No, I'll... James, this is a different conversation.
James.
What?
No.
Did you miss the bit in Transformers 4 where Optimus Prime shot Frasier?
Do you know what bit I did see in Transformers 4? Where Michael Bay tried to make an extended gag out of a kid explaining to his girlfriend's dad why it was cool that he shagged her while she was underage.
Yeah.
To the point that he produced a laminated card from his wallet... that proved that it was legally fine that he had sex with Mark Wahlberg's underage daughter.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm not defending... Specifically, I was going to say, I'm not defending... I'm not defending Michael Bay's sense of humour. Because that's the one part of any Transformers movie that... actively... cannot be said to have succeeded on any level.
Let's shoot back to Transformers 2, where one of the jokes was a character who had wrecking balls for testicles.
Jesus.
And another two racist robots who basically spoke in airplane
Holy
jive
shit.
For the entire movie.
They were so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michael Bay and humour together would be real. Like, imagine Michael Bay directing Deadpool.
That basically seems like what they're trying to do. If you wanted, if they wanted, DC wanted to do their own Deadpool, getting Michael Bay to do a Lobo movie almost feels like exactly the thing that they would do.
Exactly the mistake they would make.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is, right, if this happens, Lobo will be fucking huge and make like 600 million at the box office. Like, that's what we're looking at, right? Because everything Michael Bay touches turns to gold.
Well, apart from the last Transformers movie, interestingly enough, which kind of, it felt like just suddenly the world had gone, yeah, we've had enough.
And that's weird, because 5 is really good fun.
So I've not actually seen 5, so I will refrain from criticising that movie specifically.
It has the watch that killed Hitler in it.
Great. I do wonder about something like Pain and Gain, which I know a lot of people did quite like. But for me, was just in such incredibly poor taste that even when I could kind of appreciate the comedic chops of Wahlberg and The Rock and Anthony Mackie, it was all just coloured with this, like, oh, I it leaves a sour taste in the mouth. And, I just can't. I can't see this with Lobo. And the flip side of that is that, Seb, if they try and do the thing that you said other people are trying to do with Lobo, which is take the character and just treat him seriously, I think I'm looking forward to that movie even less with Michael Bay directing.
Yeah.
So, I just hope this doesn't happen. Apparently, Michael Bay has gone in, and at the moment, the scripts that exist would cost $200 million to make. And Michael Bay said, if you can bring the budget down, we can make it. But, like, for that amount of money, it doesn't make any sense. But a $200 million Lobo movie does not sound like a good idea.
No, that sounds like a very bad idea.
And also, the character has absolutely no name recognition at all. Like, there was a period where within comics he was mildly popular, but, you know, he's not a Wolverine, he's not even a Deadpool.
He's about an Ant-Man, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, is it, but at least Ant-Man
sells the concept, right?
Yeah, it's in the name. I'm trying to think, what is the biggest punt that a studio has taken on a character? Is it Deadpool?
Because Deadpool did have a bit of recognition, particularly because of games and stuff he'd been in. Like,
there was... and he was in, and, you know, he'd already been in X-Men Origins Wolverine, so even a badly done version of the character existed.
I think it's Guardians, but even then, if you're talking about, at least the name explains the concept.
I would say Steel.
Yeah, well, we're talking about a different era, aren't we, I guess.
But yeah, if in the modern era, probably Guardians.
Yeah,
because just no one outside comics would have known who the Guardians were before the film came out.
I'm gonna put I'm gonna put my foot down here and say, for the first time, Lobo movie is not gonna happen.
We it's can but happening. Hope.
Okay, let's go back to another one of the trailers that debuted in the past week. It's a brief one, this, you guys. It's only 30 seconds long. We got another quick look at Infinity War, because it was the one superhero movie that aired during the Super Bowl. The best thing, other than the football, to come out of the Super Bowl was the Tide ads. I highly recommend you go and see them. Hopefully that's the same David Harbour that we see in Hellboy, because the Tide ads were fantastic, you guys. Highlight of the Super Bowl. This was pretty good as well. This was pretty good. It was those characters you like, they're doing things. Robert Downey Jr. told me that it's all been leading to this. So, I mean, it sucks for Avengers 4, I guess. But everything's been leading to this. Looks pretty cool still, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Can I make a bold prediction?
Ooh, I like bold predictions. They're my favourite type of predictions.
Hawkeye's not in this movie.
It's increasingly looking like that, isn't it? Like, what the fuck?
And just,
is Hawkeye?
Why not even just a glimpse of him? Even if he is still retired and not actually fighting. Although, no, he's not retired. He came out of retirement for Civil War, didn't he?
Yeah.
But, you know, even if he's retired again, just show his face, at least. It feels weird. And it's like, is there a reason? Have they just forgotten?
But it feels like, I don't know, it feels like a few times there has been stuff going on that, like, And I don't know what, I don't know whether this is just in the back of my mind, but I feel like a few times on Twitter I've seen people going, yeah, where's Hawkeye? And not just this, but like in kind of like discussion around the film and like cast lists and stuff like that. It feels like he's a character who's been forgotten about. I mean, Nebula gets a hero shot in this trailer. Like, that's weird.
The thing is, like, Mantis is in the film. And if Mantis is in the film, anyone could be in the film.
Maybe, though, maybe what it means is that there is something going on about Mantis being in
the film, but Mantis joined the Guardians of the Galaxy at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and the Guardians of the Galaxy are in this
film. Do you remember when Nightcrawler joined the X-Men at the end of X-Men 2?
Yeah, it's not really the same, is it?
Yeah, because Nightcrawler was good in X-Men 2. The one thing about Hawkeye not being in this trailer, and not being mentioned really at all so far, makes me wonder whether if there's something that they're hiding about Hawkeye that maybe
he gets possessed again.
Yeah, that would
maybe he loses an arm.
Maybe he is old man Hawkeye now. I don't know. Who cares? So who knows where Hawkeye is? Everything else about this trailer, it's kind of all about the character pairings right now, isn't it? You know, it's like, oh, look, there is Spider-Man and Iron Man and Doctor Strange stood next to each other. That's cool. Oh, look, there is Rocket Raccoon flying a little space pod while Groot plays his Game Boy or whatever he's playing. Hopefully a Game Boy, that would be apt for Guardians of the Galaxy. And Thor stands behind them. You know, that's kind of all that these trailers need to do at the moment, is just show these characters, you know, walking alongside each other. Oh, look, there's Cap and Red Sparrow, no, sorry, Black Widow and Vision walking together. Cap's got a cool new shield from Wakanda.
They got that Man of Shield.
They did get that Man of Shield. Not as cool a shield, I have to say. I like his, well, not his original shield, his second shield. But yeah, this movie's going to make all of the money, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to make all of my money.
I mean, if this movie was coming out on Valentine's Day, we would both be going to see it. No question.
I wonder whether... So obviously, like, Age of Ultron didn't make the money that the first Avengers movie made. In a way, Avengers Age of Ultron felt like the same thing as the Avengers again, just with, you know, a couple of extra characters.
Don't think this film should be called Avengers Infinity War.
What should it be called, then?
It should just be called Marvel's Infinity War. This is not just a sequel to Avengers.
Yeah,
this is not,
it kind
just
of should
Avengers
just be called
film.
Infinity War, shouldn't it?
It's about all of them.
And who are the Avengers?
Well, exactly. Well, that's another thing. Yeah, there isn't an Avengers team.
No, there is an Avengers team. It's just, it's like War Machine and Iron Man. Not even Iron Man. It's like
Scarlet
War Machine,
Witch.
Scarlet Witch, Vision.
Vision, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was the thing, because they were the Captain America team, but then Civil War happened, so the ones that were left became the Tony Stark. You know, the end of Age of Ultron was Captain America establishing that team, and then Civil War was Captain America losing that team.
But what all that goes to say is that this feels like it feels like a completely different proposition to the first two Avengers movies.
Yeah, exactly. That's what
the
I mean.
The first two Avengers movies were, here, let's put these 4 to 6 characters together, and this movie is going, here, let's put these 40 to 60 characters together.
The Avengers was, let's bring together all of the stuff that we've done up to this point. Infinity War is, let's bring together all of the stuff we've done up to this point, which includes the Avengers, but is not limited solely to the Avengers. I know why they have called it Avengers, because it is technically the third Avengers film. It's a branding thing. You know, that is still the name that people will recognise. But I think you could get away with calling this Marvel Infinity War, because, as I say, you know, it feels bigger than that and more important than that. It does make Age of Ultron feel even less like an Avengers film, really. But then I also think Civil War should be an Avengers film, but hey ho.
Well, yeah. So my prediction is that this, once we have finished Phase 3, that Avengers Infinity War will be the highest grossing Marvel movie.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is to say that Avengers 4 will not outgross it. Whatever that is called. Because I feel like this, like it feels enough of something new.
Yeah.
that audiences are going to turn up for it in a big way that they didn't for Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is going to feel like part two of this.
It won't be able to do what this did. They only ever had one opportunity to do Avengers, which was let's unite all of these individual characters. This is the only time they'll ever be able to go, for the first time, we are bringing together the Avengers team and the cosmic side of the universe and the mystical side of the universe, all these separate things that we've established, we're bringing them all together for the first time. That's apart the only time they'll have that ace up their sleeve, apart from Hawkeye. Well, maybe for the fourth film, they'll be able to go, we're bringing together everything that we've done before.
Everyone and Hawkeye.
And Hawkeye.
But still not the TV people, never the TV people. my one and only caveat to all of that is if they nail the final 5 minutes of this movie to the point where, you know, it's not only the people who turn up and see this movie in cinemas have to come back, but anyone who missed the first one has to catch up before the next one comes out. That, you know, it has to be like truly spectacular, which
like it has to be like Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah. they have to have like a secret weapon in their back pocket. I don't know, Hugh Jackman staggers onto screen or something. something like that. So Avengers Infinity War, it's going to be pretty cool. Speaking of those TV people, Marvel got all of their major players together for a big class photo to celebrate 10 years of the MCU. Guys, I don't recognize everyone on this picture, but is anyone from the TV side of things in this picture?
No, because it's the Marvel Studio. It's not Marvel TV.
Yeah, but even Clark Gregg was kind of like.
In fairness, I mean, when this photo
Gregg
was taken,
been in more Marvel movies than most of the other actors.
When this photo was taken, Clark Gregg was at NYCC, and they took the photo in Los Angeles, so that's why he's not in it.
Right, I'm looking at the photo now. Is Hayley Atwell in it?
Yes.
She is. Where is she?
God knows, but she's the only one smiling. So.
Spot the Hayley. Yeah. Okay, that's my next task. Oh, no, Paul Rudd's got a big smile on his face there.
Paul Rudd.
Yeah, but that's because he's like a competition winner.
I rewatched Role Models because it showed up on Netflix this week, which is a thoroughly average movie, but Paul Rudd's Starbucks rant in that movie is a thing of genius. And, yeah. I would watch any bad movie with Paul Rudd. Marvel got together for their 10th anniversary. They've taken this picture. Is there anything to get excited about? I don't know.
No.
Is there an Easter egg in there? I thought they could have cleared up the shit, you know? Like, there's a lot of wires on the ground and stuff, you know? Oh, I found Hayley. She's next to Pom Clemente.
There you go.
Ah, good. I was just concerned that anyone who had been like who had made the leap over to TV.
Well, Jamie Alexander, notably.
Oh shit!
The portal closed behind her.
I presume again because I'm just looking through it because I hadn't looked at it in detail. I presume neither Natalie Portman nor Kat Dennings are in it either.
Nah.
It's weird, isn't it?
There is
it's
a definite sense like of certain characters don't exist anymore.
Were you in a film that came out or is coming out in the next few months? You were allowed in this picture. Were you actually part of that? Like, where's Ed Norton? It's for me, it's one of those, I get why they wanted to do it, but I think it becomes one of those things that you look at it and it's more notable by the absentees than who's actually in
it. And I think that's what everyone ended up talking about, who's missing, because it's the first thing you do is you go and look and see who's missing and what does that pointedly say?
Oh god, I just spotted Vin Diesel. He is in the MCU. I totally forgot. So were they all actually there? Is that the thing about this?
I imagine they were.
Nobody looks photoshopped in, definitely.
But if they were going to photoshop people in, they would have had in everyone they could have.
That's about Clark Gregg.
That's what I mean. They got Joss Whedon back.
Looking pretty rough.
Pumping him for DC secrets. I don't really know what to say about this, but also I can't take my eyes off it. It's like they do it for the Oscars every year, don't they? And you're just like, oh, who sat next to who? I do. It's it, it's funny, isn't it, that there's kind of like, yeah, there's kind of no hierarchy here, but there's definitely a sense of a hierarchy.
I do like how everyone looks miserable, except for, like, Hayley Atwell and Paul Rudd. It was like, it's like the photographer...
John Favreau looks happy.
Well, it's like he didn't say, you know, smile before he took the photo.
Right. I'm gonna tell you who looks happy. Favreau looks happy. Brie Larson looks happy. Tom Holland looks happy. It's all of the people whose contracts still have multiple movies left to run. Goldblum and Waititi look sexy. They're rocking some great poses on the back row.
I love Benedict Wong's suit as well.
Oh, yeah.
Benedict Wong has got a look about... I did not expect to ever be in this situation in my career, if you look at his career up to this point.
Benedict Wong always dresses like that, though. He looks fucking rad all the time. Frank Grillo just, like, stumbled in off the streets in his ripped jeans.
God, Joss Whedon does look rough, doesn't he? Just landed on him. Because I'm scrolling across the massive version of it. So you're going to get about four people on screen at any given time. So it's quite... All of a sudden, someone like Joss Whedon pops into view and it's like, ah!
Oh, look, Hawkeye got in this one at least, so that's nice. So that was the MCU class photo. Very nice. Let's transition over to the small screen and the people who weren't allowed in that photo. This week we got the trailer for Jessica Jones Season 2. Which is a Marvel TV show that I'm actually looking forward to. So I think we've discussed this before. I think all of us had kind of issues with Jessica Jones Season 1. And I think particularly kind of some of the missteps that the show made in its second season, in its B-plots, and also in some of the pacing and the silliness that came into things. But when I think back on the show, the things that I remember are Kristen Ritter's performance, the general vibe, the kind of the psychological stuff with the Purple Man, the kind of the way that it did really nail the trauma of Jessica's past experiences and
the
psychology of that character trying to break past that. And in the same way that probably when I see a trailer for Luke Cage Season 2, not to the same extent as this, I think, but watching this, I was like, yeah, I can imagine, you know, a Season 2 that is better than Season 1, that kind of irons out some of those
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
Zeroes like, in on Jessica as a character.
It seems like there was scope to improve, and maybe they have, because the only time we've seen a second season so far has been Daredevil. And Daredevil Season 1 was great, so it was kind of inevitable that the second might stumble a bit. Whereas this time, Jessica Jones Season 1 was mostly quite good and then had some problems in the middle.
I think, from memory, it was kind of like episodes like 8 through 11 or something like that. There was just it kind of lost my interest. I didn't really care about the nuke stuff that was happening on the sidelines. The episodes with Kilgrave's parents and trapping him in the glass prison, I didn't think really worked.
And the fact that it took 13 episodes for someone to go, oh, let's put in some earplugs.
But yeah, I am actually looking forward to this. And I say that as someone who's kind of the last 2.5 seasons of Marvel Netflix TV that have come out, I have been, you know, completely bored to tears by.
I mean, I've got two things to say about this trailer specifically. The first is that the reason I feel like I'm looking forward to this is because I went back and watched Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23 on Netflix between this and Season 1, and it turns out Kristen Ritter is a much better comic performer than I gave her credit for.
James, do you remember all the way up to the first season of Jessica Jones coming out, and you were like, she just looks like some emo girl, and like, that's not what Jessica Jones should be, and I was like, yeah, but Kristen Ritter is really good, honestly.
Well, you were correct.
She is really good. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward...
Because that's the one thing kind of coming out of Season 1 that I'm, like, just convinced by, that, yes, I want to see Kristen Ritter play this character.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it on that level. Also, the thing that interests me is that they did essentially all of the first season of Alias in... The first series of Alias, sorry, in Jessica Jones Season 1. So they're essentially being given a blank slate here to come up with their own story. Because, you know, they can't go to future Jessica Jones comics because in the though she's married to Luke Cage and pregnant and in the Avengers. So it doesn't really work.
And it seems like the Jessica Luke thing was something to kick off season one of Jessica Jones, but not really anything that they want to do long term, given what they've done with that character since.
No, quite. Not least because he needs to stay separate for his own series. So yeah. It kind of, from the trailer, it kind of looks like they're going to be investigating her origins in some way, which is something the comics never really did.
The comics has that one issue, doesn't it? Alias has that one issue.
Two-parter.
Oh, yeah. But it's not like a major story.
And the first season of Jessica Jones kind of hinted at
that. Well, that's the thing. MCU TV shows, through the Netflix shows, I should say, sorry, they've seeded the idea of this company called IGH, which I think has been involved with Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage's origins.
Right.
Like, I think, I may be making this up, I think IGH were the people who were transporting the chemicals that you know, got Matt Murdock.
Is this a different company to the company that was giving Nuke the pills at the end of Jessica Jones season one, or is that the same company?
I think it's the same company.
Okay, right. So we're hopefully going to move on from mysterious ninjas to mysterious businessmen.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I'll welcome that. James, the one thing that I liked about the trailer was there was a couple of shots of it. Jessica, finding a piece of art in the back of a... it was like a canvas print in the back of a van, and it is very clearly like a Michael Gaydos piece of art.
Yep.
That would look at home on the front, on the cover of a Alias comic.
Gaydos or because the Alias covers are
David
Mack. Yeah, of course,
David Mack. Yes, that, and that is what I meant, but I don't know comics well enough to remember these things. It's very clearly Chris and Ritter in the pictures. Mm-hmm. And it looked really cool, and I was like, oh, I like that.
Yep.
I like that a lot. That show is not too far away now. It's March the 8th.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like because we've got, the first batch of Marvel Netflix shows felt like they were all like, the dates were so important, but we're now at the point where Netflix releases so much original content and there is so much superhero TV that a show like Jessica Jones can almost sneak up on us. And it's like, oh, it's out in a month. And I go, oh, cool. Yeah, we'll watch. Thanks, Netflix.
Oh, and hey, speaking of superhero TV show sneaking up on us, seeing as I'm probably not going to be on the Black Panther episode, I think by the next time I'm on an episode, the Tick will have come back.
Seb, let's commit to this now. We're doing a Tick bonus episode.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to rewatch the first half of that season before I watch the second half. So
I am not a TV show goes online on a service and I immediately binge it type person. if I binge, it's because I'm catching up on something. And usually I'll draw things out, but I'll be watching those six episodes within a few days of the 23rd of February.
Okay, very final piece of news now. And this is, speaking of things that have snuck up on us that we didn't really know existed, there is a new Kick-Ass Comics coming out. It's Comics Corner, you guys! Comics Corner, there is, Kick-Ass 3? Is that what it's going to be called?
There was already a Kick-Ass 3. It's just called okay. Kick-Ass. It's easy to forget that there was a Kick-Ass 3 because Kick-Ass 2 was so bad that nobody really paid attention to Kick-Ass 3. And Kick-Ass 3 wasn't great, but it was a lot better than Kick-Ass 2 and was basically what Kick-Ass 2 should have been, rather than getting horribly diverted into all the stuff that Kick-Ass 2 actually did.
I never want to read that comic, to be honest with you. So it's like a reboot where it's the Kick-Ass world and I imagine some of the characters, but it's got a new lead.
Yeah, because spoilers for anyone who is ever going to read it, but Kick-Ass 3 ended with Dave joining the police. It's very definitely that story is over and that character is squared off.
I quite like that ending, I never knew that. I was like, that's nice.
It's one of the things that makes Kick-Ass 3 actually, as I say, much better than Kick-Ass 2. And, like, oh, that makes sense and Mark Miller said, I don't know if I believe him, but Mark Miller said that's always where he intended the character to end up. And it makes sense. It does work as a, oh, okay, that's what you were leading towards. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and this new version, the lead character is going to be a single mum in her 30s, is that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that the deal?
Called Patience Lee.
Okay, and I guess we don't need to dig too much into, like, the actual content of the comic. I guess that's going to speak for itself once it makes its way out into the world. The thing that caught my eye about this was Mark Miller and Tessa Thompson, who obviously listeners will be aware of after she played Valkyrie in Thor Ragnarok. They were kind of tweeting back and forth about how great it would be for Tessa Thompson to play this character in a big screen version. Because it's normally the kind of news that I go, yeah, okay, I'm sure you would both love for that to happen. But it won't. When Mark Miller's involved, I kind of like that huckster instinct. You think he's going to find a way to make that happen, isn't he? Or it already is happening and they just haven't announced it yet. They're just trying to build some buzz for it. I'm sure Ava DuVernay is going to tweet an announcement that it's happening any day soon, despite it being nothing to do
with
movie she's making.
The thing with Mark Miller is, like, people in the movie industry listen to him because he's got a lot of... What do you want to say? He's got a fairly reliable track record of turning comics into movies that then make money.
Mm. Yeah. And
I mean, it's worth pointing out.
No one cared about Kick-Ass 2, really, when it came out. And Kick-Ass was a movie that needed Matthew Vaughn to pick up the rights and kind of find the funding himself to make that movie. But I think that Kick-Ass has enough cultural resonance that the first movie kind of cut through enough that I think that character has some cachet. And we're now much deeper in a kind of like culture that is obsessed with superheroes that I think you could... And, you know, like, kind of in the wake of all of the news this year and kind of the cultural movements we've seen coming out of Me Too, rebranding a recognisable superhero with a female black lead, you know, Tessa Thompson playing that character, I could see that working. And, if I'm a movie exec and I play the part, you know, once every fortnight on this podcast when I'm doing the pitch, I'd be saying... Yeah, green light that.
I mean, this is Matthew, like...
Are you busy? Can you make this instead of Kingsman 3,
maybe? This is the thing about Mark Miller, which is that this reboot kind of feels like he's gone, oh, well, I've got a piece of IP that I've already burned because I said I'm not making any more Kick-Ass. However, there's a movement about female leads and, you know, racial diversity in superheroes. I can hop on this bandwagon with my Kick-Ass character who I don't really... want anymore. Like everything Mark Miller does, there is a cynical edge to it. It's not to say it's bad or that it's a bad thing, but it is, like, for a guy who makes money out of chasing, like, the most obvious idea and then calling it, like, his own original thing.
Listen, honestly, in a world like the one we live in, I've always thought it takes capitalism to make these social movements work. And honestly, now, hopefully Black Panther is about to make all of the money, and Wonder Woman, we know, made all of the money. We've got this social movement that is, you know, dominating the conversation right now.
Well, this is kind of my point.
If someone like Mark Miller identifies that and goes, because of that, I want to make a movie where a black female character is now Kick-Ass. Fucking great.
Yeah, well, this was kind of going to be my point, which is that if Mark Miller has identified that as a way to make money and become more famous, That's ultimately a good thing, because that, like, he does not hop on a bandwagon that is headed for a gorge.
Yeah, you're never going to see this kind of lasting representation unless there is a way to make money out of it. And, so hopefully now there is a way for rich white blokes to make money out of it. And then hopefully those rich white blokes in a generation's time won't all be rich white blokes because of stuff like this. I kind of feel like this is a movie I'm going to see. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just something about this story that passes the smell test, and I'm like, yeah, I can see that happening. So that was Comics Corner.
I've got a very quick piece of news that I think we should mention as well. Not about me, comics related.
Surprise news.
Has anyone noticed that the Wolverine the Long Night trailer is now out?
No, I don't know what that is.
This is Stitcher Premium's Wolverine serialized fictional podcast.
It's basically like it's a podcast version of when Dirk Maggs did those Death of Superman and Batman Nightfall Radio 1 audio dramas in the 90s.
It's a Wolverine audio drama with Richard Armitage playing Wolverine.
Richard Armitage's Wolverine, yeah. Which makes it even more like one of the old BBC ones, and the fact that they've actually got a British actor to do it.
Wait, and they want me to pay for this?
Well, they want people who pay for Stitcher Premium to listen to it.
Is it only available on Stitcher Premium?
I believe, initially at least, it's only on Stitcher Premium. Well, quite. Listen,
good luck getting listeners on that.
Here's the thing, guys. These podcasts are a flash in the pan. They'll never work.
And I also think that
imagine sitting down to hear some idiots huddled around a microphone. I think
that scripted dramatic audio podcasts are definitely a terrible idea. You should do this,
as wasn't
especially
a podcast.
Not with comedy in.
I think that will probably pass me by if I have to if I have to part with money.
I listened to the trailer.
If it was a podcast I could have downloaded for free, I would probably have given it a go. Hey, John Ronson released his latest book as a free podcast, and that's fantastic. Everyone should listen to
that.
Wait,
did he what?
I've forgotten the name, but it's really good. The Butterfly
Effect.
Oh,
yeah, that's not a book, it's just a podcast.
No, but it was like it's an audiobook, essentially.
I guess so, yeah.
I've listened to some of John Ronson's audiobooks, and there is no discernible difference between his standard audiobooks and The Butterfly Effect.
Fair enough.
So, and I didn't have to pay for that. And
if John Ronson did a Wolverine podcast, I would be all over it.
Oh my god, yes. Love me some John Ronson. Okay, so Wolverine podcast that none of us will ever listen to.
I might do it now just to prove you wrong.
James, if you pay for Stitcher Premium, you are not allowed to take that at the Patreon. No.
Hang on, wait, should we be criticising Stitcher Premium? How do we get Stitcher Premium to pay us to do a podcast?
Yeah, actually, we are fully behind this idea. And Stitcher, we love everything you do.
To quote Joe Cunningham on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice.
We did stop saying Stitcher, yeah.
I cut it from the last episode, and I'm never turning back. No, fuck Stitcher. This sounds terrible. Okay, that is it for this week's podcast. There's no pitch this week because this is a minisode following a minisode. But we'll be back later this week with our Black Panther episode, basically as soon as we can bring it to your ears. I'm excited, we're all excited, but no one is more excited than Amon. That episode will be coming later in the week. Shall I do all of the normal...
Yeah, it's still an episode. I don't know what I'm titling this as. The listeners, you'll know before I do now what this episode's been called.
0.75, I think, probably.
Yeah.
Will that work? We could just keep...
Or 0.5.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, don't forget that the next episode we'll be talking about Black Panther. If you're enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on Overcast, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice.
Which,
if you are
going to
leave us
Stitcher.
A review... Yeah, well, no, it won't. If you do want to leave us a review, do that over on Apple. I have deleted my app because it was started being crap, but we still do want the reviews over there. That would be fantastic. And if you want to support us, you can do that by heading to patreon.com/cinematicuniverse, which we will not be spending any of those funds to listen to a Wolverine podcast. You can find more episodes of the show at cinematicuniverse.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter at @cine_verse, or send us an email to editorial@cinematicuniverse.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in less than a week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.